I think too, there's a lot of pressure. I get a lot of messages from people on social media. I would say 50-50 men and women about how like I need to settle down.
Yeah.
And I, you know, could be a poor representation of a role model because I'm choosing to fulfill dreams and goals.
Wow.
Instead of like settling down and having kids. So.
Something's not right about this thing. I've invested a lot for this to be a poor result. All right, guys. Well, welcome back to the Functional Life Podcast. Jason Ferguson, Will Hamilton here. We're your host, where we come in and we talk about all things that make up a wonderful, healthy, functional life.
Yep.
And we're excited to be back with a new guest here recording on a Labor Day.
I know. No laboring for us.
Did you labor today at all?
I did not labor. This is labor today.
So funny thing about me is that growing up, my dad was in construction. I grew up in construction. So my dad would always, like, we have a day off school. We always had to work. Mm. My dad would always say that it's Labor Day. You're supposed to work. It was like, I always thought he would made up some story that Labor Day, I remember it distinctly. And I asked him about that. I was like, Dad, none of my other friends are having to, they get to go to hang out at the pool today. He's like, no, Labor Day was invented so kids would get out of school so they could come home and like back in the, he said it was back in the farmer days for harvesting. It was the fall harvest.
That's amazing.
And he said they would go, and we had a farm, but we didn't have like a ranch. Like we had some hay. We'd have to do some work, but I had to go work construction. And I was like, oh, that makes sense. Fall harvest, you got to get out of school. The kids all have to come home and help. And that thing, I looked it up like years later, and it's like a holiday for like the labor unions movement. Like, so it's completely not right at all.
That's amazing, though, that yeah. He sold you on that.
Yeah. I thought, okay, I guess you have to work.
It's a very literal guy. It's not called lay on the couch day.
That's exactly right. Well, be that as it may, welcome. We want to welcome our guest this week, Christy Ventry.
Hello. Very excited to be here.
You sound so professional.
Okay. No, I feel like I have to loosen up. Okay, I'm ready.
You do. Christy is a part of our gym here. She's been a friend of ours. And Christy, from what I know about you, the three things that we thought would be fun here is, of course, your adventure company, Ventry's Adventure, travel company. I think people, that's your social media handles. That's the thing that you put out there the most. I think people wouldn't know that you're also a school teacher. That's your full-time job, or has been.
Yeah.
Up until now, and may continue to be. And then, you know, you have another part about you, your sort of private life. That's your social, your gym. You're very into fitness. You're a college athlete. Is that right?
I was a college athlete.
What'd you play in college?
So I played lacrosse, but I was only on like the club lacrosse team. So that doesn't really count. But then at Georgia, I actually danced for them as well. So I was a D1 dancer. Wow. I don't know if that counts, but yeah. So I did that, and I was actually training to be a Radio City Music Hall Rockette.
Wow.
Yeah. And then I ended up being in a horrible car accident, and I like broke my back. It was not my fault. You can totally get into a car with me. And that ended my dancing career, like right on the spot.
So are you the right height and all that? I heard that they have stringent requirements.
Yeah,
that.
I was the right look, the right height, the right weight, all like of Avatar. The things that mattered, I guess. I don't know. And so, and I just was so excited growing up in New York. I really wanted to be a Rockette. And then, yeah, that just ended very abruptly. But I don't know. I feel like your path may not be what you think it is. And so you have these events in life that maybe shift you and you're like, oh, okay, that wasn't supposed to happen. Like, here's what I'm supposed to be doing.
Wow. Learn something new every day.
I know.
That's amazing.
Yeah. That is amazing.
So set the table for us. Rewind the clock just a little bit. You just said being from New York,
yeah.
But then you said while I was at Georgia. So give us just a little bit of a history on you. Like, where'd you grow up?
Okay.
How'd you make your way down here? That type of thing.
So I grew up in Long Island, New York. I love New York. I am very much still like Northern at heart. Actually grew up, was born in Manhattan, then moved out to Long Island. And we ended up moving down here because my dad had like a 5-hour commute every day. My dad is amazing. And he would have a 2.5-hour commute into the city and then 2.5-hour commute back. Mm. And it was just a lot. You know, my mom was also working full time. She had her own company. And so it's almost like ships in the night. They would pass each other and, you know, but they were awesome. And my dad just decided that that was not the quality of life that he wanted for himself or really for the family. So we moved down here. I went to middle school and high school here and then to the University of Georgia. So technically I'm more Southern than Northern, but I just feel like my personality and everything has always been.
So you were how old when you moved here?
6th grade. So 12, okay. I guess. Yeah.
You consider yourself a New Yorker.
For sure. I like talk fast. I get so excited. I don't breathe in between words. It's like, you know.
So that's home for you.
Yes, definitely.
Interesting. All right.
Yeah.
And so now you are a teacher by day and a small business owner by night.
Yes. So that whole idea of what is a functional life to you, and I was like, ideally, it would be this really amazing work-life balance that I have yet to accomplish. But yeah, so most days I'm up early in the morning. If I'm not here at the gym at 5:30, I'm taking some calls internationally, and then I go and I'm at school and I'm working all day, and then I come home and I'm working on Ventures Adventures, and you know, go to bed, wake up, do it all over again the next day.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So. Well, so tell us. Ventures Adventures.
Yeah.
You, I think we know, and maybe our listeners, some of them would know that you, it is a travel company.
Yeah.
How did that start? I mean, did you grow up loving to travel and you just wanted to turn this passion into something you could monetize, or was it more education, school related? Like you needed to do it for school?
It was a lot. So when I went to UGA, one of the big reasons why I decided to go there outside of football was because they had an amazing study abroad program. And I had a high school teacher who would always talk about like teaching and traveling and how they always kind of went hand in hand. So he really kind of sparked my interest, Coach Dodd. The best. Yeah. And then so after I studied abroad at UGA, I was like, this is amazing. I never want to come home. Like, I absolutely love traveling. So literally anytime I had a break, I was constantly somewhere in the world. My parents were like, are you ever coming home? So when I started teaching, I worked with EF Tours. They are a very big educational like travel company. And they really were basing their whole company off of like profits and trying to cram as many kids into a bus as possible. And for them, it worked. Like, there's a lot of positives for EF Tours. We unfortunately had some instances where when we were abroad with kids, things kind of fell through the cracks and it wasn't set up well just because you're dealing with so many people. So there was one night in particular, we were in Sweden. I think I was up with another chaperone until like 4 o'clock in the morning, trying to figure out like, what the heck are we going to do the next day? Like, our guide was gone, everything. And so my students were like, you know, you travel a lot, you should do this. And so Ventures Adventures was actually like a student thing. They came up with my logo. They came up with the company name. They came up like the hashtag. Oh yeah.
Wow.
So, and then what we try to do is I try and hire kids back. So whenever I need guides to go in other areas in the Southeast, kind of smaller, I always bring like old students and I give them the responsibility since it's kind of like a full circle.
Wow. Sort
of thing. Yeah.
That's amazing.
That is.
So you take, is this middle school or high school kids that you're taking abroad?
I take middle school, high school, and college.
How do you select the kids who get to go? I assume you have a ton of applicants and you've got to figure out who's right for the trip.
So we always like to make sure that the kids are going are not going to be kids that have consistently gotten in trouble in school. And so they don't necessarily need to be the best students as far as like, you know, in social studies, I love social studies. That's why I teach it. But, you know, a lot of kids come in like, Miss Ventury, I cannot, what is happening? So you don't need to be like an A+ student. We just look for kids that are truly leaders in their community. They're leaders in the school, whether that be like helping a kid out off to the side with homework or like really stepping up in the classroom, kids that are going to really want this experience. So part of the application process is really nominations from their fellow teachers about why this kid would be recommended for this particular program. And so that's typically how we get our kids.
Wow. So, oh, that's awesome. So teachers are recommending and kind of giving you the idea that these kids show the characteristics.
Absolutely.
So you need more teachers to know about Ventries Adventures so that more people can send more candidates your way.
Yeah, absolutely. I understand as a teacher that you have so much on your plate, like just in the education field today, there's so much going on. So one of the things that we'd love to do and that we're kind of working towards right now is selecting teachers to be able to take their own students abroad. Like, they've worked so hard throughout the year. They deserve this experience just as much as the kids do. So instead of me taking all of these students from all over the Southeast abroad continuously, we're really looking for other teachers who want to step up to that challenge and, you know, be that chaperone, be that educator on that trip.
That's what I was going to ask. So up until now, it's not just your kids that you're taking in your actual class.
Right.
It's kids. I mean, maybe it started that way. I don't know.
It did, yeah.
But is it kids from your entire school and now even outside of that?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. It's growing. And so that's why, you know, we really want to kind of give back to the local community. We want to give back to teachers. I feel like teachers get the shorthand of the stick. There's not, you know, even teacher discounts. There's like not a lot of that going on. So what we try and do is create this really wonderful experience that both kids and teachers can really be involved with.
Nice. So how do you pick your locations? Is this like, Christie's bucket list of, man, that place looks that's amazing. What I think it is. So yes. I'm going.
For sure. Okay. So here's the thing. I feel like, and I've always said this, and I know sometimes this rubs people the wrong way, but to me, I feel like Europe is very overrated. I feel like if you're going to go study abroad and you're going with the group, you want to go somewhere that you may not necessarily go by yourself. And most people, when they get older, they get to college, they're going to go study abroad in Europe. That seems to be like the epitome of travel. Yeah, right. So what I like to do is pick places that are a little bit more off the beaten path, that are just a little bit more awesome than some of these European cities. And that's kind of how we decide to go. So we really focus on South America and Africa. Like, those are our favorite continents to take kids to. It is way outside of their comfort zone. And it's great because they grow as people. They get, you know, kind of exposed to all these different kinds of cultures and food and learning experiences. And it's just not the same thing in Europe. So
I say the same thing. My sister lived in Paris after college for a long time, and we'd gone to Europe twice as a family growing up. So she went to study and then eventually got a job and worked in Paris. So when we would go to Europe to visit her. Like, that was the thing. Go to Paris, then you're there. So you do the London, Paris, tunnel, the whole thing. Everyone's done it. But the most impactful thing that I ever did back when I had time and more flexibility travel was in South America. I lived in Ecuador for a summer. And this is what she said, like, as a young man, like, exposed to a different culture, a different, obviously demographics are different, get outside of the affluent American bubble.
Yeah.
I think that did more for shaping me and experiencing adversity and that sort of thing than any other trip I've ever taken.
For sure. I agree. And it's funny too, because I think with some of these big educational companies that push like Europe and you have to see all of these places and a 10-day trip, we're not like that either. We really like to kind of immerse the kids in the local culture. We're not one of those companies that's going to be like, hey, you know, let's hit four countries in 10 days. That is not us. That's not, you know, you're on a bus for a long period of time. You're really not able to be a part of the local culture. So where we decide that we're going to go, like, we're truly immersing those kids in those locations. They're meeting people of the local community. They're always completing some sort of service project to give back. So we try and find places that are meaningful and impactful.
That's awesome. And you guys are headed where in a couple of weeks?
So we are actually, this is an adult trip. We are leaving to go climb Kilimanjaro, and we are very excited.
No big deal. So,
no big deal.
It's one of the seven summits. Okay.
Yes.
It's not Everest.
Well, it's so a good transition. Then pivot that. Okay. How did you get from you're doing the students and now you're a full-blown adult planning trips, travel agent. You do a little bit of everything else.
Yeah. I guess like the pandemic had a lot to do with that. Like, it was purely student study abroad. And the pandemic happened and I realized like, okay, I love what Ventures Adventures is. Like, I definitely stand behind like the mission and the vision of what I really want this company to be. And it was not going to happen because of the pandemic. So I refused to kind of accept defeat. And I realized that during this really intense period of time, people need the outdoors. They need something to kind of give them purpose, to keep them going. And so we shifted and we became this outdoor adventure company instead of student study abroad. So now for adults, like 21 and up, we have these big sort of like fitness or goal oriented trip, like the rim to rim hike, you know, hiking the whole Grand Canyon in one day. That's 24 miles. Kilimanjaro, that's a huge trip, 7 days. So, you know, we do a little bit of everything now.
You do some just fun. Like, I went on the ski trip with you last year.
Yes.
I'm going again this spring.
Yes.
We had a great time.
Ski trip was so fun.
And you've done a trip organized. I don't think Christy went. Is that right, Jason?
No, that's right. Yeah, she did not go. This was my family.
But she organized it. Tour guide.
Yeah, she was actually, one of the things I will really support you here.
Oh,
we were out in Steamboat on a family ski trip, and the day we arrived, she's texting me like, hey, did you get there okay? Your transportation there?
Yep.
Well, she was in Iceland.
Yeah, with
on
kids.
One of these trips, texting me to make sure that my trip's going okay. I was like, okay, this is legit customer service. Like, that's amazing.
Wow.
Like, I would pay extra, and I don't think I did. I think you were able to find us deals, but
yeah,
I would pay extra to have somebody who not only takes care of everything,
yep,
but also continues to check in and make sure that everything's okay. Did the ski butlers show up and is everything going okay? I'm like, that's next level. That was really impressive.
Thanks. Yeah, I just care about people. And I feel like if you are going to stand behind, you know, what you are and what you say you're going to do, like, that's just another way to do that, especially today on the internet. People can find out very quickly if whether or not you are authentic and whether or not you actually stand behind what you're doing. So yeah, I just really care about everybody who signs up, whether it be me creating an experience or you coming on an experience. I care about everybody so much and I want them to have such a wonderful opportunity that I'm always like, how is everything?
Yeah.
Are you having fun?
I think that's the fun part that to me is that how you've pivoted. And for people listening that don't know that, like, okay, she was a teacher taking students on study abroad, educational trips. Then the pandemic happened. She threw in some adult trips. But as a small business owner, as naturally that would happen through this process is you've developed relationships in this industry.
Yeah.
And it was, this seems to me that that was a logical step to take. Like I have vendor partnerships with certain people. I get certain deals at certain places. I have relationships across the country to help me organize trips. Why wouldn't I now turn this into almost like a full blown travel agency where you probably can't scale yourself. That's something we always talk about in here.
Yeah.
So you can't go on every trip. Yes. You have your own life, but why would you not now? Hey, I can help design trips even for families, even for their own groups, for other students, for other schools, for other teachers.
So the question that comes to mind is, when does the side gig overtake the primary gig? And is that happening already? Like what's happening? Because you've got basically two very full-time jobs happening right now.
Yeah. And I think it's funny too, when you're like your personal life, a little cryptic. I'm like, I don't really have one right now. It's supposed like it's two full-time work lives. And I joke about it and that's fine. I feel like, you know, in order to make whatever step I'm trying to make, like that's just something that kind of goes by the wayside for right now. But I don't know. I think I love both careers equally. I'm very passionate about both of them. I think being a teacher for 13 years has given me the opportunity to be a successful business owner because, like, I mean, I have to market to 12-year-olds every day. I got to tell them that geography is cool when, like, they're like, it's triangles on a map, Venturi. It's not that cool. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that and crisis management and being able to pivot. There are so many things that education has done for me in order to be successful at, like, a business professional level. I just think right now teaching has become so different than when I first started 13 years ago too. So it's kind of weighing both back and forth.
What do you mean teaching's become different over the last 13 years?
I think like teachers have just become the enemy and I don't know why that is. I really truly think only if you're in education can you truly understand everything that teachers do on a daily basis. You know, the kids are amazing. It's never been a question about the kids. Like they've always been the best part. But I think the expectations, kind of the regulations, the amount of work that's kind of been put on us, you know, for the past couple of years, and then you couple that with the pandemic and school shootings, there's just a lot that has really kind of changed the face of education, and burnout is a real thing.
Well, so. It seems that this is obviously a hot topic right now.
Oh, yeah.
You read reports that teachers are quitting in droves.
Yes.
They're having hiring staffing issues, getting them to come back in on this other end, getting them out of college, whatever that requires. You hear and read about the pressures under. Obviously, the pandemic was a different kind of animal. As the country, I think, is coming out of that, it doesn't seem to me like, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, it doesn't seem to me like the issues are improving. Even when those sort of virtual and those really quick pivots, we all as business owners had to take really fast pivots we weren't prepared for during this pandemic. Education being probably the top of that list. Nursing, I mean, there's a few that really come to mind. But it doesn't seem to me like that switch is flipping back, which tells me that maybe some of these issues were inherent and present before the pandemic happened.
For sure.
So that's what I would like to know from your take. You've been doing this for 13 years.
Yeah.
How has it changed over 13 years? What are the problems that seem to be getting worse specifically? And what if you could wave a magic wand and fix something?
Yeah.
Is it, what are the do they need more money? Do they need less expectation? Do they need more time? What is it that you think would fix the problem?
You know, I think these problems that have been in education have been exacerbated by the pandemic. So these issues, I think, have been there from the very beginning. But it used to be one of those things where it was okay because you loved the kids, you understood your role, like it was fine. No one ever gets into teaching for money. Like that's not why people do it.
Right.
I do think, though, there are just there are too many issues in a classroom for a teacher to have to put out the fires for it by herself. So like, I guess a good example would be one of my class periods is extremely diverse. I teach one class where it's like English as a second language course. In that class, I have 31 kids right now. So 31 students in the class. There's like not enough room. We're constantly trying to find desks and get creative with everything. And so I have some kids that are incredibly gifted. I have middle of the road kids, like kids that you just call them on level, which I don't even know why we like label kids, but you know, they're on level, middle of the road. And then I have, I would say I have another 10 kids that truly struggle with language. So whether they be like just out of the ESOL program or they currently don't speak any English, I have 4 or 5 different languages, excuse me, in that class right now. And I can speak Spanish fluently, so I'm okay with like speaking with those students. But, you know, I have several other students that are from other areas of the world that are not Spanish. So I don't know how to like speak to them. So it's one of those things where you're teaching this lesson and you're enriching the kids that are gifted because you want them to be able to go above and beyond. You want to give the kids that are like middle of the road your attention to make sure that like they understand what's going on. Then at the same time, you are switching back and forth between Spanish and English to make sure your other students understand it. And then you have these other sheets that are in like the mother language of where these other kids come from on top of like the English that you're also doing in that lesson. And I'm in that classroom all by myself. So when those 50 minutes are done, you're like, I don't really know what I did.
Did we accomplish anything?
Did I accomplish anything? Do we know what's going on? You know, the kids are, they're so amazing. And they, I think they can kind of see like everything that's going on. And so that's part of it. You know, these teachers want to meet the needs of every single kid in your classroom. You know, like they're trying so hard and it's difficult because you don't have the class space. You don't have the time. You don't have the resources. And so I think paying teachers a little bit more would definitely help, but that's not going to be the end all be all. Just because they have a higher salary doesn't mean that they're going to be able to fix everything that's going on in the classroom.
I saw an interview with the, you probably remember the Gwinnett County teacher. There was Teacher of the Year. And then in his acceptance speech, he resigned on the spot, which it went viral. Video all over the, and I don't know if it was him or someone after us on an interview and they were talking about the money part. Like if we offered you, I mean, I heard one teacher said she hadn't gotten a raise in something like 5 years.
Yeah.
But they all even said, if we gave you 20% more, would you stay? He said, no. It's not about, again, I didn't get into this for the money.
Right.
20% is not making a difference in the fact that I don't have time to go to the bathroom.
Right.
Between classes. And they lay out literally their expectations to monitor the halls, do their grading, do the lesson plan, then go to the lunchroom, watch kids. They're all, literally, they don't have time to eat lunch or even go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
Without help.
And I think that's the part that I think a lot of people kind of miss, because like, oh, we have summers off, and you're like, that's not necessarily the issue either. You know, it's the lack of professional respect, I feel like, and saying that you only have 22 minutes for lunch, but really you can't eat your lunch because you're monitoring everything that's going on in the cafeteria. You know, not being able to go to the bathroom, really not being able to be sick because there's no subs that are able to, you know, watch over your class when you're gone. And on top of that, you have kind of certain parents that are emailing, and there's all these other, you know, issues from the lack of a family unit that's been going on for the past couple of years. And so it's all of that lack of professional respect that I think is just really making teachers super frustrated.
Yeah, that's something we experienced this last year. One of our kids was having just a really hard start to middle school.
Yeah.
And long story short, it turns out he really was high on the ADD spectrum and like needed some help. And so once we got medication right, I mean, he's a different kid. But during that time period, every like 2 or 3 weeks, we're having calls with all of his teachers.
Yeah.
So like this was like all hands on deck kind of stuff. And you could see they were very frustrated. And I told him, like, listen, guys, I appreciate that you allow him to just stand on the side over here because he's fidgeting. But I want you to know, from the parent, you have my permission to be the authority figure. Mm-hmm. I want you to be the adult in the room. I want you to set a standard and then hold him to the standard. That's perfectly fine with me if there's accountability happening. And it was like I was speaking a brand new language to 100%.
Them. 100%.
And that they're like, thank you so much. No parents ever say these kinds of things. And my mind was really blown because I guess it's naivete, but I just think back to our upbringing.
Yeah,
which wasn't that long ago, like literally one generation ago, our parents deferred to the teachers. If the teacher said Jason was talking in class, that was the gospel truth, and I was punished for it. It wasn't the teacher it wasn't my parents calling the teacher. But like, I'm not sure Jason was really talking. You're wrong. So I don't understand how in one generation it is completely swapped from what you're talking about. I would just say is respect for the authority figure that is the teacher and the principals. Is it when we took certain punishments out of school? Is it society at large? Like, what's happened in literally one generation where it went from teachers were the authority figure, almost kind of like police were respected above reproach, and now everything is questioned and everything is questionable?
I don't know. I think social media has a lot to do with that too, and like everyone's access to wanting to blast someone on the internet and want to be the person that is perceived to be right in every situation. I will say one of the biggest things that I have noticed is that, you know, as a family, my parents made sure that we always had dinner together as a family, and no one was ever allowed to eat in their rooms. Everyone ate at the table together, regardless of who had practice and who was coming back and forth. Like, it was the family unit and the family dynamic, and, you know, no phones, nothing was allowed at the table. And you start seeing what's kind of going on right now. And that sort of thing seems to not be in play that much anymore. So to me, I think it's a little bit of the lack of the family unit and the family dynamic. And, you know, with us being teachers, we're with your kids more, I think, than, you know, you guys are some days. And so we're kind of like that first line of defense and the first responder in certain situations. So I think it's definitely like this progression or the change in the family unit. And then also like wanting to blast someone on social media whenever you can to look like the hero or to be, you know, funny, things like that.
Do you feel handcuffed at all would be my other question. When I hear Jason say that, like, you go to the teacher, say, hey, you have our permission to be the authority, disciplinarian, whatever you need. And the teacher saying, oh, thank you. But at the same time, I'm wondering if she's also thinking, yeah, but I'm actually not allowed to do all the things you're giving me permission to do.
Yeah.
You know, in your case.
Yeah. There's definitely a lot of that. I will say, like, in certain instances of teaching, we've had kids that have gotten in teachers' faces, yelled at them, cursed at them, you know, fought a kid, and that kid was back in class within like the next period. And so when you have things like that, so when you have things like that, it just, you don't feel like you can control the situation. And then those kids that are considered to be a little bit more dangerous, just in the sense of like how they're acting to other peers or to the teacher itself, it really kind of, it makes your hands tied, because you're like, okay, well, I can enforce it, but if I send the kid to the office, they're just going to get sent right back to me. So we're told, you need to handle your classroom. You need to figure out what it is to make it work, because we're not going to be able to necessarily like help.
So I hear two things. I hear you say, it sounds to me like there's two issues that you see up front. And one is that more of what I would call the disciplinarian side, where that you feel like we've lost connection with the parents at home being as present. And that's making the product, which is the student, a harder product to get to the level we want them to get to and meet the expectations that we're putting on them as as an educational system. So is that the bigger problem? Or the other problem you mentioned earlier sounds like, and quite frankly, this could be a local Georgia problem, because I know the level of excellence the schools within 10 miles of here are known for.
Oh,
I don't know if
this
is a problem all over the country, but maybe it is. I don't know. Are we trying to fit too much into too little? And so that's when I hear you talk about the time issues, and you hear people talk about the pressure and the academic standards we're pushing kids to. And we expect our teachers to do more and more and to get them to push their kids further and further. Yet there's only so many hours in the day. The teacher still needs some time to herself to eat her lunch and go to the bathroom. Not to mention, hey, maybe when they get home, they might want to go out on a date or do something on their private life.
Yeah.
And so have we put trying to fit too much in the bucket?
Well, I don't know. I think for kids and for pacing, everything is great. Like, I don't think that that's the issue there. Okay. I think that leadership definitely likes to create new buzzwords and create new trends that they want teachers to be a part of each year. So it's, you know, it's new paperwork that you have to fill out, new curriculum team meetings. So it's all of that stuff that should not take the priority over you truly being ready to teach the next day for all those levels that you have in the class. So as far as like curriculum is concerned, I feel like we're great. Like, everything is fine there.
Wow.
I do feel like cell phones are a big issue. I think the attention span, I read something that it's like the amount of minutes correlates to how old you are. So for my sixth graders, you only get them for 12 minutes and then they're checked out and they're done. Mm. So you really are fighting this battle of like technology and attention span. And then, you know, obviously there's the discipline side of it. So I think it's like just a big pot of things.
Sure. There's not a one solution fits all. But if you feel like you had the support of the partnership with the parents at home, you think that would go the furthest and getting, hey, I could actually fit all these other puzzle pieces in place if I had to, if I just had the help and the parental, this kid came to school more grounded, more central, more calm, more open, ready to learn. You feel like that would really make your life a lot easier.
I think it's 50-50. I think for some teachers, maybe. Like, I don't have discipline problems in my class because I have a great relationship with my kids. Like, I care about them. They know that. Like, I probably do way too much. So for me, for some teachers, yes. For me, I think, like, the other side of that, the teachers really need the support and help from like the powers that be, whether it be administration, superintendents, things like that. Like I said, to use my classroom as an example, to have that many kids at that many different levels and to have no help, you're like, I don't even know if I did anything.
What would help look like? You say no help, like a substitute in your class. Help. What
yeah, maybe getting a little bit more funding to be able to hire somebody else for your English language students. I teach social studies. That's low man on the totem pole. So really you're in there kind of by yourself navigating those waters. So
that's what I mean. Call it out. What do you need? I mean, people listening to this, if you've got senators, you've got congressmen, you're writing in, you're voting, you're going to it sounds like here's what our teachers need. They need more resources. They need more help. They need more people. We need to hire more people.
Yeah.
Well, we need money to do that.
Yeah.
I'm still baffled. Like, we do as much as we can as a family, as a gym. I think you do too, Jason. Like, when my child elementary school gets a new teacher, she sends out a list. We really need like dry erase markers. It'd be great. And I'm sitting there wondering like, really? Like,
yeah.
We don't buy them enough dry erase markers to write on their board. Like, I don't remember when I was in school, we had chalkboards, but I don't remember some teacher like asking parents to raise money to buy chalk. Like, it just seemed like it was there.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, it's a lot of that. But you know what, though? I will say that another thing that could go a long way is just be nice to your teachers. Like, send them an email. You know, I send out weekly emails to all my parents all the time to say, here's what's coming up on the week. Even being like, hey, thanks so much. Like, we really appreciate this, or we really appreciate you. Something. Just something nice. Take the time out of your day to send a thank you note to your teachers. And I truly think that that would go a long way too.
Yeah.
So
I would suspect that your students are a bit intimidated by you as well, because like, you're pretty buff, like, oh, you're in shape, like, you CrossFit, right?
Almost Rockette.
Almost a Rockette.
We don't talk about me in the classroom, but that's fine.
So talk to me about that fitness side of things. Like, that's how you and I met, is here at the gym, maybe even during one of the CrossFit opens. And then I've seen that you go around and you do other competitions as well. So it seems like that's a big piece of your life as well.
Yeah, it's so funny. So my students call me Strong Woman. That started last year.
I
think that's synergy because like, when I first joined Synergy, it was like the winter time, or what is winter in Georgia? It was like the fall-ish. And so then in the spring, I was wearing like a shirt that just like, you could see my shoulders. It was appropriate for work. Don't worry, for those of you who are wondering. And so they just keep calling me Strong Woman. So it started like, they created this cake project for the Cold War, and they had me breaking down the Berlin Wall.
Oh my gosh. That made my day.
So there's like this model cake of the Cold
War. It's not Gorbachev.
It's So it was so funny. I think CrossFit has become such a big part of my life, because that is literally the only hour that I get to myself every day. And it's a way that I'm able to kind of shut out the noise in every avenue of life and focus and better myself. I feel like, and this is totally me. Like, I love what I do. I love every avenue of what I do. I'm super passionate about it. I'm trying to be all of these things for all of these people, that sometimes I forget that like, I too am a person and I need to do stuff for me. And that's kind of how this came into play and being here and being part of this community. But yeah, I love competing. I am very competitive. I think it's a lot of fun. I love to drop in and do competitions kind of all over the world. And so that's been like my favorite thing.
Do you take that as a compliment when they call you Strong Woman, or
I get so awkward. I'm like, stop looking at my shoulders.
Yeah, but some women would not like that.
I think it's great. You know, and the funny thing is too, a lot of people kind of poke fun of, they think I'm like lame because I work all the time. And if I'm not working, like, I'm at the gym. But then in that same breath, they're always like, oh, like, I wish, you know, I could look like, as, you know, in shape as you are. I'm like, it's just the commitment of going to the gym. And they're like, nah, I'd prefer happy hour. I'm like, okay, well, my happy hour is at the gym right now. So here we are.
Well, but you mentioned this, so I have to bring it up, because it's a little bit more on a serious subject here.
Okay.
When you said fitness and all the things you're involved in. Like you said, I have to do some things for me.
Yeah.
So when I said one thing that, and I'll tell you later about other things I've noticed about you that I find very interesting. But one thing that you are somewhat cryptic about, but not so cryptic that it's not clear what you're saying, is that there are some pressures that I think you perhaps feel, correct me if I'm wrong, socially, that I wonder as a young woman, as a young professional, successful woman that's starting a small business involved, she's very fit, she's very active, she's well-liked in the community. You've been clear that it has affected your social life. Like you've joked around that, hey, yeah, I don't have a lot of time for things like dating or friends or going. I think you told me once, yeah, it's like everyone thinks, like they roll their eyes at how I'd rather be on a plane to Kilimanjaro than taking shots at a bar lame date with bad breath.
Yeah, and why settle for a mediocre Saturday night when you can climb a mountain? I mean,
like, hey, I love it. Like, the way she says it, it's clear. Like, of course, what she's doing is so much better than that.
Obviously,
but you can talk about those things you deal with personally. But the bigger topic I want to get to here is that how much pressure do you feel as a society and a culture? I only say this because I actually heard a podcast on this recently that blew my mind. And I would think the difference in these girls were talking about this, were in New York actually.
Okay.
And they were actually drawing the contrast between the South or other areas outside of somewhere like New York, where if you are a 33-year-old attractive, successful female in the South, people are wondering what the hell's wrong with you.
100%.
If you're not dating, married, settling down, whatever, how would they define those things right now? Maybe you feel that from your friends, maybe it's from your family. Can you talk about that at all? Like, do you think that's an issue?
Oh, for sure. And it's funny because, like, I joke with my parents about this all the time. They always say that, like, if I get married, they're gonna be wearing like orthopedics. I was like, okay, like,
right.
Literally just had this conversation. My parents are amazing. We are a very, very like tight knit family. I have never once felt any sort of pressure from them. They are so proud of what I have been doing that they are not really focused on, you know, me trying to hurry up and get into a relationship. I think, though, they do want to make sure that, like, should time pass, that I'm sharing life with someone, whatever that looks like. They are not very much traditional in the sense that, like, we need to have marriage. Right. But there's never been that pressure for them. I will say, in the South, being a female business owner in an industry that is predominantly male, that also poses a little bit of an issue, I think, because you come into this industry, you want to, when you meet someone for the first time, you want to look professional, but you don't want to give off the vibes that you are too professional or that you're too stern. So it's one of these things, like, as a woman, you really have to flirt with that line of like, I am very professional, but I'm also very approachable. Like, I don't have that resting face that people are going to say, you know, all the things. But then you also can't be too friendly because people think that you're flirting with them. So it's like, you know, it's all of that pressure of trying to make sure that you come across as someone who truly takes what you're doing seriously, but not seriously enough to where, you know, you can't like cut loose and have fun. I don't know. So there's that. And then, I think too, there's a lot of pressure. I get a lot of messages from people on social media. I would say 50-50 men and women about how like I need to settle down and I, you know, could be a poor representation of a role model because I'm choosing to fulfill dreams and goals instead of like settling down and having kids. So
I'm sorry. I hate to hear that because that's what I suspected. And it's having gone on a trip with you, I think there's two sides of it that maybe someone would wonder that gets close to you and gets to know you is it just literally a logistics thing? Like there's only so many hours in the day and I'm shooting my shot right now. I'm working on, I'm teaching, I'm growing my business. I'm traveling. It's just legit. Like I don't have a lot of time to sit at the bar with some random dude right now. Or is it kind of a lack of desire? Not like you're not interested in, and I don't just mean dating, but even friends and other social groups. Is it more like, hey, I actually would just rather be doing these other things? Could be a mixture of both.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that there's an unfair expectation put on women in that regard here. And I've even thought about you. I've only been on one trip with you, but I sit back and look and say, I wonder how much she has to think about. What if a single guy signs up for one of her trips? Does she have to think like, is he doing this to pursue me?
Yeah, that's another
thing. Is that
thing.
Kind of a
you
funny
have to, like,
place?
You have to tread softly because you like get these people and they sign up on these trips and they're very excited about it. And you want to give them the very best experience. But then you also have to make sure that you are not, I don't like air quote, leading someone on. But it's like you're coming because you want to be a part of this experience. Like I am not a part of it. And that can be that can be kind of tough. But no, I'd love to meet someone to do life with. I think right now it's just, you know, my goals are different. I love to go to the gym and I love to work out. And right now I think there's like a certain age bracket where people have just lost sight of taking care of themselves.
Right.
And so I don't know, there's like that aspect, or everyone thinks I'm like the really fun adventure girl, but then they see how hard I work and like that's a turnoff too. So it's hard to meet people in the dating world that are like wanting to take on everything that I really would like to do. You know, at the end of the day, you just want to take a breath.
Do you think if you were in New York still, that would be different?
I think that the expectation of not being married at 33, that wouldn't even be a point of contention.
Right.
I think you would still have to be aware of some of these boundaries with, you know, males and females, like in that capacity, like that doesn't go away.
For sure.
Yeah. But I think being up north, I would never have to worry about like being 33 and unmarried and like, what have I done wrong in life?
Yep.
So there's that.
You heard it here, guys. Christy, if you're a person, it doesn't have to be a dating relationship, but if you're a friend that likes to travel, likes to work out, likes to take care of themselves,
then maybe
Christy would give you some time.
I have friends. Let's just clear the air. I have friends, okay? At least three of them. They're all very supportive. We're good.
Good. Well, that's good.
So friends are good.
I'm still stuck on the comment that you made 5 minutes ago that it could be disappointing somehow that you're achieving your goals.
Yeah, I went on a date with one guy like recently, and he was like, this isn't going to work. And I was like, that's fine. He was so boring. So I was like, just trying because he had a job. And I think at some point you would just have to lower your standards and be like, do you have a 401k? Like, perfect. This is where we are.
In his defense, you'd be a hard person to compare to. Like, everyone seems boring compared to you.
No, but he was like, this isn't
going to
work.
You're going to climb Kilimanjaro.
Okay, well, and that's what he said. He's like, I'm just trying to get through my day and you're climbing a mountain. I was like, I don't understand why that's like a bad thing. I work in life insurance. So there's that, you know. We're trying. That's good.
Yeah.
That's good. But now, you know, with being a teacher, my students are always like, I have an uncle. I'm like, stop it. We're done. I don't need that help. We're okay.
I have an uncle.
God. So nice.
That's funny.
That's good.
I have a funny question because I know you won't answer that. I've asked you this one before, your favorite place you've ever traveled. And someone like you, I understand that's a very hard thing to answer. Bucket list, where if money, time, logistics was no object, what's the place that you have to get to before you die?
Okay, so this is very difficult for me because I also have lots of places that I would really like to see. So I think right now I'm very much torn between Vietnam. I'd love to take off for like a lot of time and kind of be in Vietnam. Or I really want to visit Namibia, which is another part of Southern Africa, which is basically just a desert.
Have you heard of that, Jason?
I've heard of it. I can't pronounce it.
Or spell it.
No.
So those are like my top two places right now that I am
really
hoping to get to. But both are long flights. And I think you guys know that I'm like terrified of flying. So this has been.
What about you, Jason?
So that's a good question. I'm planning right now, secretly, no longer a secret, with Ventry about putting our 20th anniversary trip to Italy.
So fun.
Oh, wow. In a couple years. Like, I'm putting it out there
into the
ether.
Love that.
I'm hoping that dollars come to fulfill that.
Is Ventry an Italian name?
Yes, it is. It means stomach, which is very attractive. And I love to eat. So it's like a perfect win-win.
No, it's exactly why we're going.
Yeah.
We're going to eat our way through Italy.
There you go.
Have you been to Italy?
I have. I actually lived there for a period of time, too.
Well, do you have a favorite place you've ever been, Jason, of any trips that come to your mind? Us, it's a little easier because there's a lot less of them than Christie's.
My favorite place ever is Punta Mita, Mexico. It's
okay.
On the West Coast.
Wow.
It's beautiful. It's rocky cliffs. I was just talking about it the other day. There's a golf hole at the golf course there that the island, it's an island green. Mm. You hit from the mainland onto an island, and at high tide, you can't even go get your ball because
you can't
get out there. But at low tide, you can walk out and putt it out.
Okay.
So that's just stuff like that is really cool.
Yeah. No, that's awesome.
What about you?
Where would I go if it no object at all, money?
Yeah.
Space.
Really? You're one of those.
Just
you want to go to space?
Space. Just the space would be fun. A planet would be even better if I could land on a planet and walk on it.
Okay, fair.
But I'll take space.
Okay.
That's my thing.
Yeah, the 3 years to get to Mars is kind of a deal breaker for me.
Yeah. Well, I would even do it if I could, I think. If I didn't have all these other things removed, like there's just something been fascinating about space to me. Because it is the final frontier, Christy.
Yeah, but like I just feel like of all the things you could waste your money on, that would be.
I would love to see the Earth from that perspective. Yeah. I think it would change everything. I watched so intently when William Shatner went up in the Today Show and out, or they did the whole thing.
Yeah.
And now he was in tears. And I just imagined that would be me too. Cause he's a very smart, great shape for the age he went up. I was impressive, everything he did.
Yeah.
But the way he describes it still, I think is the way they would hit me too. There's something magical, and it makes you feel so small, yet not insignificant, because you realize how important life is and how our role here is. And that, I'm not going to pontificate anymore about it, but I think that that would be my favorite place I've ever been. I'm infatuated with the West for some reason.
Yeah.
So that's why I jumped on both of these Western trips. We took a ranch, like a dude ranch kind of thing with the kids to Arizona. My sister organized most of it. She's the Christie in our family. And we coupled in the Grand Canyon with that.
Awesome.
So that was, seeing that was everything. You know, it beats Europe for sure. I think, I haven't been everywhere in Europe, but I think Europe's overrated. I think the U.S. itself has some amazing things to see that most people haven't.
Yeah. Well, I got to say, this has been super fun. Thank you for coming on.
Yes.
Ventry's Adventures, school teacher, CrossFitter.
Oh, God. Okay.
I mean, all these things. It's impressive that you can balance it all and have the energy to just kind of keep going and roaring at it. So.
Yep.
This has been a lot of fun for both of us. We really appreciate you coming in. And,
thank you. It's nice
I think
to be here.
People are going
to
really enjoy getting to know you over this podcast.
And if you're listening, and election's coming up, teachers need more support.
Yes.
Go do whatever you got to do. They need more money. They need more help. They need more fun. They need all that. Go. Let's rally around something that's important to all of us, I think, and get this thing done.
Yeah.
Like it's bad. All right. Thank you, Christie.
Thank you.
All right. Have a good one. Until next time.